Casey, can you hear me?
I got you, brother. You
All
got
right,
me.
awesome. Yep.
The technical difficulties, that's that the timing of that was just
Yeah.
ironic and coincidental.
Yeah. I'm glad you
Yes.
got it working though.
Yes, very rarely happens. There's usually my internet goes without a hitch, and like I said, just the timing, dude, that was crazy. But we're up. We're up.
All right. I'm just going to go ahead and have you introduce yourself for anybody that's watching this or listening to this doesn't really know who you are, but I
Sure.
doubt that amounts to many people in the home inspection industry, but
I don't know. My name's Casey Bartley. I'm a home inspector in the Kingsport, Johnson City, Bristol, Greenville areas, Tri-Cities, northeast corner Tennessee, borders of North Carolina and Virginia. I can get to Virginia in about 15, 20 minutes and get to North Carolina, probably about 30 to 40 minutes. Pretty area, mountainous area. Been a home inspector coming up on 9 years, be 9 years this August. And then the previous 17 years in construction to one degree or another, eventually ended up getting my contractor's license and had a storefront where, had some employees and installation crews and an office manager and thought that I would enjoy that. And it did not go like I expected. This is in my early 30s, so man, I shut that down and transitioned into home inspections, and it's just been awesome, man. It's God led me to where I am now, and it's the perfect place. And that's why I've stayed solo or single firm this many years later, is the extra revenue to me is not worth the headache or the, and I hate to say headache of employees. It's worry about their livelihood. And I've said this on other podcasts, but it's just great to only be responsible for yourself, and it's a good career. I love it. Yeah, man. And that's about it. I created a template, that's helped a lot of inspectors, and that's probably the only other thing I'm known for, is being an inspector and creating the template. And that's it. Just another inspector like the rest of us, just going out there and crawling through houses all day.
awesome, man. I'm
Yes.
gonna link your report in this so that if there's other inspectors
Oh,
listening,
thank you.
they can go grab that. But yes, I
Thank
highly
you.
recommend Casey's report. I purchased it just to take little tidbits out of it because it's so incredibly detailed and in depth. So yes, awesome,
Which
awesome.
yours is as well. Yours is, me and you are cut from the same cloth, brother.
Yep.
That's why I knew this podcast would go so good, because our outlook on the industry and how we approach our business, there for the client, and the kickbacks we have got from the realtors and contractors over the year, we're very similar.
And I think that's why, you've been doing this longer than I have. I've been doing it just over 6 years.
I told somebody today that I was doing this, and I said, I think Zach's been doing it for 7 years, so I was pretty close, dude.
And so when I started, I joined some Facebook groups, and I was just looking for somebody to kind of latch on to that I because that's kind of what I do when I start different things. I want to find someone who's like I think is great at it, who's doing a good job, who's got everything going, website, the look, all that stuff. And I found you, and I was like, this guy's nobody
Oh.
else is like this guy. Everybody else was like, an older dude that doesn't have a website. They got a really bad logo, and I found you, and I was like, this dude's killing it. And I remember asking you like what software you were using, and I think at the time it was like Spectacular, but then you really
Was.
quickly switched over to Spectora, and I
Yes.
checked Spectora out, and that was in 2017,
Yeah,
and
man.
I was sold on that.
That was their fruition. So you must have came in right behind me, because that was the year they started.
They tell me that I was one of the, I guess, OGs,
Yep.
because I got locked in at that nice low price there.
Me too. Me too. And I pay it annually every year with a smile, Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I want to talk to you about I guess you mentioned like the industry, and I think when you and I came in, things were starting to change in terms of how thorough inspections are getting.
Yes.
It isn't just that pen and paper report with like three defects on it. And you Absolutely. Really, I think, have amplified that to the next level. And rightfully so, I think, because this new age of buyer, this millennial Gen Z, they want that thoroughness. They want to know everything. And
we would want that if we were buying, you know, and we weren't in the industry. That's what we would expect. And I, you know, I think that's why you and I have had problems with realtors and all the thorough home inspectors across the country, because you get on one group or another and you can see the same conversation occurring. A realtor said this, a realtor said that. And this is definitely not going to be a realtor bashing podcast. We've got to sympathize with them, and just what you just alluded to, what they have seen, the transition they have seen in the home inspection industry, you know, over the last 15 years, but even the last 10, 5, and 3, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, 15 years ago, it was carbon copy, 3 pages, and the roof, you had 4 checkboxes. I mean, it was good, marginal, fair, poor, and the guy would check one of the boxes, and then there may be like 2 little note lines there, and he would scribble a little something, and that was it. Where today, we are expected to call out, let's just take a roof, for example, every single deficiency we can see. I mean, you know, the orientation of the underlayment in comparison with the drip edge, kickouts, sidewalls, you know, counter and step. And then, you know, you go into staggering and racked shingles and manufacturer's defects and hail damage and nail pops and protrusions and flashings and boots. And I mean, it is so in depth, but ultimately the buyer wins. And you've got to kind of lead with, and I'm actually creating a video that will go out with my Spectora email when the report is sent, because of course, you know, I never hear it from a buyer, but I hear from realtors often, you're overwhelming the client with all this information. And I can understand that. 80, 100 page report, 150 photos, thermal imaging, 60 to 100 defects. Of course you are. So, you know, I want to create a video that says, hey guys, if you've had a home inspection before and it's been a few years, the industry is shifting, and you're going to see that represented in this report with this amount of detail and diagrams and information. You know, anything can be fixed. And I always encourage, you know, buyers, I say, hey, read through it, catch your breath, you know, sleep on it if you need to, what have you. But what I want you to do is go through there and you pick out everything that you just cannot live with, you know, that hits, resonates with you, that what you cannot accept at that house, get quotes on it, what have you, go back and make an offer, you know, with that in mind, or ask to have it repaired. The worst thing that can happen is the seller says no. And then you've got to decide on your own accord, okay, is it worth me? They said no, so I'm purchase price is here plus repair. Does it still make sense to me? You know, and that's all you can do, you know, but also alluding to them or telling them, and do this every day, you know. Now, if you terminate this deal, I can very well find this many issues or more on the next. But then again, you may get lucky and we've got less issues. You don't know, but I do find these things quite often, you know, and so try to just offer some perspective to them, because, you know, and that's why I kind of wanted, and I talk too much, man. You're leading this podcast. I need to let you talk, man. But the YouTube video today, and at the end of it, you know, I got called, and you've heard this a million times, nitpicky, you know, yesterday, and I've heard that for years. In my mind, nitpicking is like, there's a scuff on the drywall, you know, or you're or your drawer knob is loose. You know, that's nitpicky to me, not foundation cracking, moisture infiltration, fungal growth, condensation issues, electrical issues. That's the bread and butter. That's what people need to know. And it's not, once again, up to us to, and that's what I put in this video, up to us to decide what's important to the client. We just give the client the information, and let them, you know, do with that information what they will. And that's, you know, so I'm trying to olive branches, man. I'm trying to, you know, hey, realtors, I see what you're dealing with. I see the shift in the industry, but it's going to become pretty much industry wide. And we can see, we've seen guys just since we've been in it, how much it's elevated.
Yeah. And especially newer guys, I feel like the newer guys are coming in and they're doing the same thing I did essentially 6 years ago. They're finding, guys that have good branding, that are out there on social media, that are thorough, and they're modeling themselves after that, especially guys that come in and they buy your template. I mean, they're automatically going to be on the right path.
Yeah, man. That. And that's the best way to attain success is.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not duplication. When you follow what somebody does, mimicking somebody or what have you, but that's, if they're successful and they're doing it, do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's tried and true.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's a form of flattery. Somebody, you know, kind of copying you or mimicking you or taking ideas from you. But I agree with you on what you said about the olive branch and just helping to educate the realtors, because I think what we're running into is, in some cases or most cases possibly, is not only are they not used to seeing this many defects, but I think what we do, and I know this is what I do, is I'll see something that could lead to a greater issue. And so I might categorize that as like an orange item, because I know if this isn't taken care of, it's going to turn red. And yes. I think that some of these agents see that and they're like, well, that's not a big deal. You know what I mean? And it's
maybe
like,
not.
They don't know what we know will happen if that's not taken care of. So
yes,
I think helping to educate them, and, you know, a lot of them are starting to, I guess, go with the times and understand that, you know, yeah, this, we're going to get, you know, a 100-page report, and letting the client know, you know, this, so a lot of these things are, there's going to be in every home. Don't freak out about it kind of thing. But I think, you know, we get on that topic, me and you, because we've been thrown under the bus by them. We've been yelled at by them, called out online by them. You know, I mean, you name it. I've had a guy call me yelling at me. I recorded part of the conversation on my phone, but I'll never post it and call him out. But
sure.
Saying, you know, I'm going to tell every agent and this, our entire office is not going to use you anymore, this and that, all because I reported deficiencies on a house, you know, and it's like,
I didn't create those deficiencies. I only reported what I saw. Here's the picture. There's what it is. I'm just telling you what it is.
And I mean, I understand that we're throwing a wrench in their smooth transaction process, but at the same time, like, this is our job. They know that it's to be expected that there's going to be some issues. And maybe they need to think about having their client get the house inspected before they list it, so that there's no wrench thrown in.
Dave Klima has pushed that inspectedhouses.com forever. Yeah. And it's not, I've pitched it around a little bit. Now, once again, the agents ain't going to listen to much of what I say. So they're going to be like, oh, great idea, Casey. Yes. Come in this house and pick it apart before we even sell it, you know, but it does make sense. I think they worry about disclosure at that point. Yeah, because there's just no more playing ignorance. And I mean that in the true definition of the term of not knowing. Because there's a lot of homeowners that don't put things on the disclosure because I honestly believe they don't know it's an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, just because they're not in our, you know, they don't know the technical stuff that we do. And so they don't know that. But if you have a guy that comes through there, and especially somebody thorough like me or you that writes up 60 things, are they going to want to show that to subsequent buyers? You know, be like, hey, here, look, we had a pre-listing inspection, and the buyer's looking through it. And they're like, oh, my gosh, there's 60 things wrong with this house. You know, so it's a good idea. But I think it, I don't know.
It's a hard sell. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a good idea just from a standpoint of you're not constrained to 10 days. You don't have to try to get all these contractors in there, get bids, you know, and because sometimes, you know, and you know this, during the summer months, people are getting inspections and they got like 2 days, 1 day to get their report turned in. And that's not enough time to have people come out and give bids.
No,
but it is a hard sell. And I honestly haven't tried to sell it just because I just know the agents in my area, it's just not going to work. Now I've done some for buyer, like proactive buyers that have wanted it done, but I've
Me as
never
well.
like pitched it and went that route with it. Although I do think it could alleviate a lot of stress.
I kind of said a minute ago, I was like, people don't want to know about 60 issues, but as you know, I mean, let's take those 60 issues. Typically, 45 of them are relatively easy fixes. It's just little, things not installed, the manufacturer specs or and which we can get into why we see the problems that we do. But most of the time it's stuff that could be fixed relatively easily. There's always a handful of significant red items, but it would allow them to get all those little things addressed so that when the buyer does have their own inspection, it's not filled up with all those little things that can add to that overwhelming feeling. So in that regard, it makes sense. They could fix all the minor to moderate things and then maybe disclose the majors with a credit, or what have you towards repairing that or something like that,
Yeah, definitely. And I gotta tell you this, I had a guy, I was an older guy. I did the inspection on the house he was buying, and then he had me come out and inspect his house that he was selling. And I gave him the report. He calls me up like a month later. Hey, I need you to come back out and re-inspect the house and update your report. I was like, okay. This dude fixed everything. And I'm not even kidding. Like the blue light is sealing on stuff, like every single thing. And I was like, I told this guy, I'm like, you're my hero. Like nobody has ever in my whole life doing this or my whole, career doing this, done anything like that. And this
That's
guy
awesome.
went like, and you know how thorough my reports are going to be. He
Sure,
fixed
sure.
everything. And I was like, he did not want any hiccups in this sale of his house. And he did every little thing, big thing, like
How bad was his deck?
his deck. I don't even think he had a deck. I don't
Okay, I was gonna
recall.
say, because you are like the deck master, dude. People, I mean, I'm sure decks are trembling in the Illinois region, man, when you step out of the vehicle, they're like, oh no. So what did you think about NADRA, getting your NADRA certification?
So, funny, I actually got it like a couple of years ago, but I never paid for the actual certification. Like, I took the class because they were at a local ASHI event.
Yeah, man.
But I was like, I don't need $250 or need to pay $250 for a certification.
Sure.
But I ended up like a year later, go ahead and doing that. And I was trying to kind of send my business into that direction of,
I remember that specialty in deck
yeah, doing
inspections.
more decks. And I made that template. That's actually what sent my YouTube off. Like, so
It's
I don't know.
blowing up. Yeah, man.
I don't know if you've been to my YouTube page,
It's been a
but
little bit, but dude, every time I see, I mean, you do killer videos and you do a lot of content, which is great. We got to get into that for the newer inspectors and how they can
yes.
be more client-centric, but keep on, we'll get there. Yes,
Yeah,
sir.
yeah. So I posted this video. I did a brand new house last year. And I'm gonna tell everybody the story because
Yeah,
I
man.
think it's hilarious. So I pull up to this house. These two guys, they were buying this house, they called me. They were worried about some stuff that they saw. They didn't think it was being built properly, so they wanted me to come out and do an inspection on it. So I pull up to this house, and I get out, the client's there. He's like, hey, I'm so sorry. They're still working on the house. They're moving the deck. And I was like, they're moving the deck. And he's like, yeah, they built it too far over, and so they're moving it. I walk around, and these guys were literally unbolting the ledger. They're moving the deck 4 inches over because the way they built it, the guardrail goes right up to the window. And so they moved it. They were moving this deck over, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, so this whole section here is going to be off the beam, and the beam's going to be sticking out over here.
Yeah, man.
And so I go about my inspection. I let them finish up, and I talk like they're leaving. I talk to them. They're done. So I go back there. They literally just moved the deck. They unbolted it and they moved it. I was kind of thinking, okay, they're going to pour new footings, move everything. No, they just moved the deck on the beam. They cut that excess beam off And then part of the deck was just floating, not like one of that far joist was not even on the beam. And so I took a video of this. I was like, this is, I can't not share this. So I took a video. I walked around kind of pointing out all these defects. I posted it like a month later. I'm checking my YouTube just randomly, and I've got like almost 1,000 subscribers, and that deck video just starts taking off. I think right now it's at almost 700,000 views, and I've got 33,000 subscribers
Dude, good for you.
because of this deck video. But I
Yes.
mean, they notched the ledger to fit around a basement window. They didn't stagger the ledger bolts properly. There weren't enough. There's no flashing over the ledger. There was no actual guard support post. It was all just held up by balusters. I mean,
Crazy.
the list goes on this thing. Yeah, so that's my little story on how the YouTube took off. So I'm kind of trying to use that following to my advantage in terms of just spreading information, making people more aware of, new houses aren't perfect.
Yes.
There's issues, and I want to make I've been posting a lot of like kind of funny stuff, like things that I see, but I want to start going in the direction of more informational, educational posts just to
Right.
make people aware. But yeah,
Sure.
decks are just one of those things, and that just I don't know what it is, but I guess anybody thinks they can build one, and
It's
very rarely done properly.
you've probably heard me say this before on a video on YouTube. But I blame it on men, dude. And if you've seen it, I mean, the wife brings home something from IKEA, me or you, brings it and sets it in the floor over there behind you, shelf, cabinet, whatever. You get the pieces out, you get the fasteners out. You look at the instruction book and you're like, yeah, I can put this together. I see how it goes. And you get done and you've got four screws and two dowels in your hand, and you're like, well, it'll be all right. It'll be fine. Men do the same thing. It's the details, dude, that are so important. And that goes with decks, with claddings particularly. And that's why we see so many problems with Hardie and ASV and LP and everything else, is these old heads, these men that have been doing this for years and years. Oh, I put that stuff up 100 times. We've never had any problems with it. And that's why they're missing, horizontal flashings. And if there is horizontal flashings, they're sealed, in fiber cement and ASV. The flashing's never there. The clearances, are never right. And it's because, yes, they can put it up there, and yes, it'll look okay, but the details are what are so important. And they just don't know those details because they don't read, any type of literature as to, or keep up abreast of code changes. Subs don't really have to. Now your GC should, but your subs, they do this day in, day out. I ain't take no time, read no book, and just do it. And that's one of the reasons that we find so many things wrong, other than lack of maintenance neglect, which is probably the number one reason we see issues with a home. Secondly, is improper installations of whatever, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, decks, claddings. And it's because these guys, I've done it this way for 30 years, or I've done it this way for 10 years, and they've not kept up with the code changes or the manufacturer's, requirements or recommendations or what have you. And that's a big reason for why we see so much stuff, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's the older guy, and then they're teaching these younger guys what they know, which is the wrong way, and so it
Yes.
just kind of spreads that.
Cycle.
But one reason too, I'm at least in my area, so I've got a lot of new construction going on. I service both Illinois and Missouri. I live in Missouri now, but I still service in Illinois there. But what I've noticed is these builders are hiring the contractor with the lowest bid. And they're throwing these houses up in 3 months. Could you imagine a house start to finish from the first little thing of dirt dug to, this thing is finished 3 months?
They can't provide the oversight when they, I think all builders go in with good intentions, and I think that most of them probably keep good intentions. So if they one build, two builds, three builds concurrently, they can manage that. You know, they can, if they've got a site super, great. Or if they go by and look at the job daily or every other day or what have you, great. But they see the money that's in this industry. So they want to do 10 builds, 15 builds, 20 builds concurrently. There's no way you can supervise your subs doing that many builds. And that's where quality starts to suffer, dude. And then, of course, they want to do it faster and faster so they can start on their next development or their next, you know, so many builds.
Yep. Yeah. I've got a friend, an HVAC guy, and a shout out if he watches this to Jeremy with Stay Cool. But he mentioned to me, so the HVAC company that this big builder by us uses, he said that they actually lose money on installing all these HVAC systems in these new homes. And he said that what they're banking on is rebates they get from buying in bulk all these systems. So that's how they make their money, is getting those rebates back. And it makes you wonder, you know, how many of these subs are doing something similar. They're just buying bulk materials. They're losing money on the job, you know, getting it done really quick so they're not losing too much money. And then they're just, you know, making money off of rebates. Because like my neighborhood that I live in, it was my house was built 2 years ago. And I was the first house on this phase that I'm in. So I was watching all these other houses get built. And what I noticed is on the roofs, the roofing contractor, they send one guy out by himself and he's doing this roof, and he does a roof in, you know, less than 2 days, essentially. And something I've noticed when I'm inspecting these, because I've been doing a lot of new construction inspections lately, mostly a lot of roofs too, just people want me to look at the roof. The shingles are nailed too low. You know, you got shiners, and not just one or two, I mean, six, seven of them. None of the nails have sealant on them. The drip edge is installed behind the gutter. And what I've noticed what they're doing is they're installing that drip edge so tight against that wood fascia that they have just enough room to slide up the aluminum, but they don't have enough room to slide the gutter up behind it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a problem. And, you know, I've talked to them about it and they don't seem to think it's a problem, but you can see on some houses where that's happening, they'll have little streaks like stains on the fascia.
Yes, yep. Sir.
Where water's going behind that gutter. It's coming down that roof and going behind the gutter because they put the gutter over top of the fascia instead of on the backside.
And you probably got the same narrative. You know, when I see that, I put indications of leaking, you know, because it might not be rain at that time, but we see those streaks. I'll take a picture of it and I'll say, hey, and then you get up there and lift the shingles back, see what's going on. Here's probably why, you know, recommend an evaluation by a guttering contractor and or roofing contractor when wet conditions are present to determine, you know, what's going on, yada, yada, yada. But it ultimately comes down to that orientation. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, it's stuff like that. Like you mentioned the siding. I mean, I think when I'm looking at these new houses, the biggest issues I'm seeing is on the exterior, and that's with water management, and that's with improperly installed flashing or lack of flashing. I mean, I'm doing some houses in neighborhoods where they're not even using drip edge, and I think it's because if the city doesn't require something, they don't do it. So they're not going to do anything to go nothing more than they have to, essentially.
Passio.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
But and I mean, you know, I know you're like really big on the siding stuff, like AMSV and stuff like that. The stuff's just not flashed. They don't have like a weep screen. I see that a lot with the stone.
Oh, like, man,
no, yes. Way for water to weep out the bottom.
And it's ASV is concrete. It's a hard sponge. It's nothing more than a hard sponge that it's going to get wet, just like your driveway. Your driveway gets wet. That water, some of it evaporates, most of it permeates through the concrete. Same thing that happens with your stone. It's going to migrate right through. And if you've got, so then, you know, you should have your two layers of WRB or what have you. And, but I mean, dude, if it can't migrate to the bottom and kick out, it can sit there. You can get seal plate damage, band joist damage. And I've seen it so many times, then kick out with ASV. But there's so many things. Transition flashings are what I'm having a huge problem with here. And that would be like, you know, hardy going down to a brick veneer, and your brick ledge, you know, your row lock brick right there. And that row lock should be pitched at 15 degrees. And then your flashing being behind the WRB and really coming over that row lock. And then it should be embedded in sealant, you know, and you know you can take your finger. Most time they'll stick it out 1 inch, which isn't sufficient. The row lock is flat. So, you know, they're not doing 15 degrees. And so what I'm finding, particularly after a rain, is I'll go and I'll look at the brick at that transition, and the brick is saturated 1 foot, 2 foot down where water's going underneath that flashing, especially when you have joints in that flashing. It'll go that, that's a one place to always look is where the flashing will kind of, they may do an inch overlap on it and they don't seal that either. And it's just a point when it's flat for water to go down in, get behind the brick, and then, you know, present itself, you know, as moisture staining on the outside. And, you know, it's amazing that we don't see damage to interior walls or to the wall cavity. We can't see the wall cavity, but we don't see damage to drywall or what have you adjacent to those areas. It shows you how well felt or synthetics, WRBs, you know, perform. But you shouldn't rely upon those. I mean, you get so much water behind there, eventually something's going to give, you know.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad you said that. I think these builders are completely reliant on this this wrap, the house wrap.
Oh yes, they are.
And
they
I did a brick house, super nice house. I think it was like a $1.1 million house. The brick, like, so roof meets sidewall. Sidewall was brick. No mm-hmm. flashing.
Yes.
I wrote it up in my report. I made that a red item because I didn't like that at all.
Yes.
The homeowner was the builder of this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He says, it's okay. We've got the, what's that green sheathing that's got it built in.
Zip wall.
Zip. Yeah. It's like we've got the zip system. It's fine. And I'm just like,
not at a roof to wall intersection, brother. Yeah. Now your OSB might be all right if it gets some moisture to it, but your penetration point right there is not.
They think that's flashing. And I think, you know, the tape, you got the flashing tape around windows and stuff.
Yes.
You can't rely, like, you still need, in my opinion, and you still need a drip cap over those doors and those windows. Absolutely. You know, any kind of, like you said, any kind of transition.
Yeah.
Because I know what.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I know one common, like, design that they're doing now is, like, with the, like, the vinyl siding is they're doing, like, a vertical section and then, like, on the gable part.
Yep.
And then transitioning to a horizontal section.
Yep.
But they don't have that flashing at that transition. That
yes.
water will just come right down. What they do is they put like a piece of like aluminum fascia that it basically looks like this over the board. That mm-hmm. water comes down, hits that, goes right behind that board.
Yes, sir. And there should be a Z integrated behind the WRB coming out over the board and lipping down, and you're golden then, you know. But they rely upon that WRB to be the savior, and it will for so long. But it's, you know, and a lot of people think, you know, that flashing is to prevent water infiltration, when it is to a degree, but it's more to allow rainwater that does infiltrate in behind the cladding a means to escape. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why you can't seal, you know, the quarter inch gap required above Hardy on horizontal stuff like that. We need any water that does get behind there a means to get out, you know, so it's important both ways. And that's why drip caps, you know, are so important, because if you don't have them, the water that does, particularly vinyl siding, because it's nowhere near waterproof, water does get behind there, dude, is going to go. And if you don't have a drip cap over your doors, garage doors, whatever, the vinyl siding, it's going to go right behind that molding. Possibly get to the header, OSB, header, everything else. You got problems, man. And it's so simple to do, you know. But it's that, I hate to use that word sometimes, it sounds bad, but ignorance, you know, just not knowing, not in a bad way, but just not knowing. And it's where you got to read.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, I mean, ignorance is a good word, because I think it's these guys, they you know, and I'm not hating on the building guys.
There's a lot of good ones. Yeah. A lot of good ones, too. A lot of good ones, too.
Some of them get into this, and they're just doing it just as a job, for a job. You know, they don't mm-hmm. really care. They don't really enjoy
Take
it
pride.
necessarily.
Take
Yeah.
pride.
And they're just learning by what the next guy is doing, the guy right above them, you know, and they're not taking that time that really they should be to do research on stuff, learn why. Like, why do I need a drip cap right here? Why does a weep screed need to be put in here? Like, what is the reasoning behind it? Like, I think what they're doing instead is like, okay, I got to put this here. This goes here just because this is what I was taught. They're not understanding why that goes there, why this is doing a certain thing. And I think that's where like you almost these builders almost need, you know, like a little class, like a little intro, like
You know who should
they
teach
almost
it?
need to take like a home inspection class.
You know who should teach it? And I know you know this guy, Matt Risinger.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about on YouTube?
Yep.
Dude, that dude. So we're talking about details. That is the detail master, man. That he makes Mike Holmes look like Bob Ross, man. I mean, I don't as far as building, I mean, he is just amazing, dude. I'm, you know, watching his stuff, how he waterproofs below grade foundations and the details he takes there, and just the details he takes with, you know, flashings and sealing of the you know, band joists to foundation transitions and all these things. It's I could watch his videos for hours, man. That dude is he's sharp. He's good.
Another good one, RR Buildings. I don't know if you've seen his YouTube.
Or I haven't.
He so he builds pole barns essentially, but they're like the barn dominiums, I guess. They're
That's my
pole
next
barns, but
house.
there's people live in them. That guy, his details, and he knows how to flash stuff, but he does like aluminum siding, aluminum roofs, but he uses all the newest stuff, but like he knows water management on the exterior, and his attention to detail is absolutely insane. So
Most
he's
important thing we look at on homes is rainwater management, man. It's nothing more important in my opinion.
Yeah, and that brings me to like another point is like grading. So I feel like some of these builders are they're relying on their drain tile instead of getting that grading, shedding water away from the house. They're
Site
purposely
planning.
putting all that pressure on their foundation and everything else just to try to,
Infuriates me. It's 90. When I see proper grading, I almost fall in the floor, dude. I mean, I almost fall out in the yard. I'd be laying there and say, what's wrong? I was like, man, the grading is right at this house. I mean, it's so rare. It goes into site planning, man. So you know, you've seen the ones where it's just flat as can be. There is nowhere near a 2 inch drop in 10 feet, much less 6 inch. And they're building so close to grade level that they don't have the room to add backfill to get a slope away now because you're going to impinge on that 6 inch spaced framing members, you know? So you can't bring in backfill and get your slope away. All you could really do would be excavate farther away and try to create a swale or something at that point. But it's just the site planning, man. They're setting their foundations too low. They don't want to add a extra block. You may have a lot of concrete founded, poured concrete. We're 99% CMU block here, you know.
Oh,
So
that's
they don't
interesting.
want to add another 2 rows of CMU block in my case, or pour more concrete in your case, and set your foundations too low. And dude, there's just not the room to get the slope away now, and that creates its own problems there. I mean, as you see the repercussions of, you know, and then we could go into so grading, yes, is a big culprit of cracking in foundations because that, you know, the soil is going to get saturated and it had to stay pressured and pushing on those walls and everything else. And the water infiltration, but with the water infiltration side, damp proofing versus waterproofing. You know, damp proofing is what's required by code. And they barely do that. I mean, just slap the mastic on the outside of the concrete and use a corrugated black perforated tube at the bottom. Maybe if we're lucky, they throw an inch of gravel on it and then throw 8 feet of clay on it and crush it. And so it can't get the water away. And then where they barely hit the wall with some mastic, any crack that forms in that wall, water's going to come right through it. And it's if they would take the time to use PVC at the bottom, put a filter sock on it, use at least 12, 18 inches of coarse aggregate, and then backfill, you know, it performs so much better. And then the dent proofing versus waterproofing, step up to waterproofing, charge an extra $1,000 for the client, and apply, is it 4 or 10 times the thickness of the, and it has, the waterproofing has elastomeric capability. So it will kind of, it's a polymer modified. So it'll kind of, you know, move with the structure as it settles, and it can move with cracks and what have you, and won't just allow for water to go through it. But I can't remember if it's 4 times thicker or 10 times thicker, the damp proofing, the thickness of the, you know, the elastomeric coating. And I'd have to look it up.
It's 4. Everyone in the comments will let you know. They'll tell you.
They will. It's 4, Casey.
Yeah, no, I agree. That I just think so. And so how many times have you seen where they'll do the underground drainage for the gutter using that corrugate, and that corrugate smashed under 6 inches of soil? What do you think is going to happen at 8 or 9 feet down? You think that that's going to hold up? That's the one thing that blows my mind, is that they're not using PVC down there. They're still, like, would you use a corrugate tube for your main drain line, your main sewer line? Absolutely not.
Great analogy. Yeah, man.
And it's like they're using that around the foundation, and they're thinking that that's going to hold up and it's all good. I mean, and it might crush to where you still got some space in there. You know, water's still going to come through. But, I mean,
it gets clogged up with clay and sediment where they don't put enough aggregate and where they don't put a filter sock. I mean, they're basically useless, dude. Mm-hmm. Basically useless.
Yep.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah. They are. And I tell people all the time now, I'm like, if you're going to use the black corrugate for your extensions, don't bury them. Just keep them above ground. If you're going to, if you want to bury stuff, just use the PVC.
It's PVC. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, yep. sir.
But it's just so many things that, you know, and me and you, we could go on all day about all this stuff.
Talk shop. We could talk shop and rant and rave, man. That's what I'm good at, is ranting and raving. Yep. And I'm like, so I posted that, that video in one of the groups today. You'll have to look at, are you in Home Inspectors Helping Home Inspectors?
I don't think I'm in that group. No,
you're not in it.
I'm in like the Exchange, and then I'm in the Christian group that you guys
do. Yep. It's a good group. It's a good group, man. So I posted that video, and the first comment, I was talking about ranting and raving. The first comment, some guy got on there and said, I don't know what it is about you, but you make me really anxious. And said, you know, this has to be scaring the buyers. It's like you're an alarmist. I don't know if you mean to be, but you're making me anxious. Your video. So I watched it again. And I was like, man, I'm smiling and I'm not hollering or anything, and I'm not shaking. I was like, and so I replied back. I was real nice. I said, hey man, thanks for the feedback. I said, if I was frustrated or angry or anxious, I said, you'd really think I was off the chain, you know? So, but I can get a little passionate about things. I think that's a good thing, you know,
it's definitely a good thing, because it means you care. You're not just like, and that's why I haven't hired anybody to work with me, because I just don't think I could find somebody that cares as much as I do, like genuinely, you know, like you do. I'm inspecting this house as if I were going to live in it, or my family was going to live in it. Like I've never tried to like purposely miss anything or purposely rush through to get done or anything like that. Not. Like I'm taking my time. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. And it's a big investment for people. You know, I think these people that call us alarmists or anything like that, you know, I guess they just don't understand, where we're coming from, I suppose.
The importance we take in our job or what have you. Let's talk about your last, how far can we go back? How your last 8 months of business been?
So honestly, this month has been the busiest February I've ever had.
Congratulations.
Surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, man.
But December was the slowest month I've had since I started. I had 3 home inspections in December. Last year was okay. I did enough work to get by. until December. Obviously, December really killed me. And what I ended up doing is I got a job part time with my buddy who is in construction. He frames houses. So at the beginning, of the first 2 weeks of December, I was actually framing houses.
Great.
Or, first 2 weeks of January. I'm sorry.
That's great for hands on, you know.
Oh yeah, and kind of just learning, you know, what goes through their mind when they're doing these things. And my buddy, he's super anal about stuff like I am. So he's one of those guys
awesome.
That you want him to build your house, you want him to frame your house, because he's like got the finished carpentry mindset on, you know, framing.
Yeah, it's killer. That's
yeah.
killer.
Yeah, so I did that the first 2 weeks of January, and then it started to pick up, and that's kind of where I've been. This year has been really good for me. I've been blessed with a lot of work, so I'm hoping that that stays. But I'm not gonna. I feel like some of these guys you'll never hear from them that they're slow. But I honestly, last year was slow, and December was hard.
Well, I wanted to bring it up, you know, for some of the newer guys, the guys that have been in 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, what have you, and maybe they're having a hard time. And it's not just you, you know, it's some of the vets too, because I've been, you know, since about July, August of 2022, it's definitely been the slowest 8 months since I've been in business. You know, I used to turn down, dude, 10 or 15 a week. I mean, crazy, and be booked out for 14 days to the very end of people's inspection contingencies, you know. And some people are like, 14 days, a lot, you know, it's so regional specific. You know, some people have never heard of a 14 or 17 day inspection contingency. They're like 7 days or 5 days. Here we 14 is probably the average, but you know, I used to be booked out like that and turning all that work down. It feels great when you're doing that. And then when the bottom falls out and interest rates start rising and home values go up and inspections are being waived and you're doing three or four a week, it gets a little hairy, man. It gets stressful, and understandably so, you know, and especially a lot of these, you know, I think of these newer guys who have, you know, quit their full-time jobs with benefits and, you know, insurance and pensions and 401ks and, you know, made this transition and maybe started out, you know, just burning it up, doing 10 a week, you know, or 30 a month or what have you, 25, 30 a month. And then go down to, you know, a couple a week. It hurts and it's scary, but it's going to come back. I as well had the slowest December that I've had on record. January wasn't the greatest, dude. I don't really track my numbers like a lot of people do. I used to when I first started out. Now I'm just like, hey, let's go out and make my money and pay the bills. I'm all right. So I don't really track my numbers, but I probably did 15 in January, you know, and now February starting out good, but I can tell just by, and it's going to be regional specific, but just the volume here lately, I can feel that spring mindset coming back in. And that's always a great time for the inspection industry, for real estate in general. And I think we're going to come out of this. I don't know what, you know, I'm no financial advisor by no stretch of the imagination. I don't know what the interest rates are going to do and how they're going to, you know, dampen things. But I know that it'll come back and we'll have good spring, good summer, you know, keep plugging away and doing what you're doing. And
And I think I've already seen a hint of that good spring this month. And I think, and I don't know how the weather's been for you, but it's been surprisingly warm this month.
Us too. Yes.
Because yeah, I think it's about 65 and sunny outside right now, which usually February is when we get all the snow.
Me too. I think it's identical here, 65 and sunny.
But I wanted to share this stat with you, because what I noticed being in the groups is like you keep seeing all these guys selling their tools and their radon machines and stuff like that.
Yes. So
I know we lost a lot of guys, and I was on the edge there. I was like, I was contemplating, you know, what am I going to do?
No way.
Do this this framing full time, like, because when you're going through a whole month and you did three inspections and you're used to doing 15 to 20.
Scare you.
Yes.
Scare you. Yes.
So I was like contemplating different careers and stuff like that. But I held on because I've got such a passion for this industry and what I do. I was like, there's just no way I could stop doing this. Like, I've got to hang on. And so I wanted to share this stat with you though, because like Tennessee, Illinois is a licensed state, and this is the renewals. So only 64% of single man home inspectors renewed.
Wow.
And only 30%, 38% of entities renewed. So an entity in Illinois is if they have more than one inspector, so like a company.
Wow.
And then the, and I'm pretty sure these are the updated numbers.
Yeah, man.
But the, like before the, so this is November 2022 is when we had to renew. So before November of 2022, there were 2,053 active licenses. And after the renewal process, there ended up only being 1,300.
Dude.
14
inspectors. That's significant. That's a significant drop off.
Yeah, 700, you know, 700 people did not renew. So, I mean, it's kind of a good thing, I guess, because now there's less inspectors, but at the same time, it's, it makes me sad because how many of those guys could have just hung on just a little bit longer and been okay, you know? So, but I think we're in a good spot now where I think it's, you know, picking back up and we're going to kind of be back to normal. I don't think it's going to be COVID, post-COVID levels where, you know, you're doing 30 a month, but it's definitely going to be back to like normal, you know, before COVID. Doing your average amount. So
something you excel at, dude, that you could help a lot of people with is, you know, me and you are in the same boat. Is I used the hashtag yesterday, and it's probably not the right terminology, but client-centric marketing, man. And you know, you and I don't know how many realtors you're on the list of three of, but it's I can count one hand. So you know, we have to get our business from the public, and you do an excellent job at that. And I figured, man, maybe you wanted to tell people how you've done that. Now, yes, you did three in January, but that's due to the freaking, I mean, this is how you get your business. And that's just due to the market conditions and all the crazy stuff that's been going on. But your social, you know, your social presence. And just like you said, your followers on YouTube and your videos are very informative and your clients will see those. And I'm sure they've told you, hey, I watched this video. I watched that video. We got to have you out and what have you. So, man, maybe, and you're leading this podcast, but you do a good job of that. Maybe talk on that, dude, about, you know, inspectors that want to go that route and how it's, you know, what percentage of leads it is for you and how you do it. And
yeah. Yeah. So, I get quite a bit of stuff from Google. Like you mentioned with the list of three, that seems to be a popular, thing, but, I mean, it's less than 10, I would say. I'm on less than 10. And, you know, the ones – here's the thing, though, is that those few realtors that do refer me, they're good people. They don't complain about my reports. They don't try to sway me to write a certain way or to go easy on things. You know, they realize that the houses are going to have defects and they're able to kind of, you know, like go through that report with the client, understand it, kind of sway them in the right direction on, you know, what really needs to be done here, what can you live with kind of thing. But when I first started, I came from a web development background. So I worked at a marketing agency, and we built websites, did marketing and stuff like that. So I knew the route that people take to hire companies to do things. First thing they do, they go to Google, such and such near me. So when I started going after agents, and I quickly realized, you know, within a couple months that it wasn't a great way to sustain, because you do one little thing wrong, you're off their list, you know, and they won't even tell you what you did wrong. You wouldn't know if you did something wrong. You know, yeah. It could have been this terrible house, and all you did was just list the deficiencies.
Killed their deal, Zach.
Killed that deal, and you're gone. You're off that list. So yeah. I realized, you know, that's not a great way to sustain a business. So I went after Google reviews, and you've done the same thing. I kind of built my business on trying to get as many reviews as I could, because that ranks your website higher. I built my website and I put a blog on it because that helps your rankings. If you're constantly updating your site, that tells Google, you know, this is an active site. They bump it up on the search, The more 5-star reviews you have, you're going to show up higher, stuff like that. So I kind of went that approach, and that's kind of what I recommend doing. But I will tell
I did the same. Well,
what's that?
I was just saying, I did the same. So it's great. That's great advice.
Same thing. I do want to mention, though, to the, like any new guys who are watching this or listening to this, you can't just go right out of the gate like that. You're not going to get any business. You know, you're going to have to talk to realtors. You're just going to have to find ones that you kind of you mesh with, that understand you, that you understand them. And don't ever go into an inspection thinking, you know, oh man, what is this realtor going to say? Like, if you see something, report it.
Yeah.
Don't let that thought cross your mind on like, oh man, if I categorize this like this, or if I report this, the realtor's not never going to use me. I'm going to lose my business, stuff like that. So you can't let that thought enter your mind. And you just got to keep, you know, meet a bunch of different realtors. And, you know, after you've been doing it for a year and you've got, you know, you're building your reviews up, then you can kind of start to rely on that business there. But,
Casey, let me interrupt you just a second. Hold on. Let me interrupt.
Yep.
They just popped in from school. So this is Taylor. This is my 9-year-old.
Taylor,
this
how
is
are
my
you?
Wife just popped in with some croissants.
Oh, exactly.
She's really good.
That's what we're having for dinner is croissants.
Oh, croissants, nice.
Croissants, bacon, and strawberries, man.
Yeah.
That's what she brought in. So that looks pretty good. And sun chips. I don't like the sun chips, but everything else looks pretty good.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Let's get talk. Sorry about that.
No, you're good. What I wanted to mention, though, something I noticed about you're in like the 400s on your reviews, aren't you? Like 400 something, 5-star.
I've been stuck forever. I'm at 479, dude. I was at 484 3 weeks ago. I guarantee they have removed 50 reviews in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years,
really?
And I don't know why. You know, I can't figure it out. So I've researched it. I've Googled, you know, why am I losing reviews? And they say, you know, some people can deactivate their Google accounts, that will take it away. But that's just a lot, you know. I've got a killer idea that I'm going to share with everybody, dude. Unless you're in my local area and you probably don't want to try this because it's not going to work. dude, I'm going to get some cards made. And this ain't no great idea, but I'm going to get some cards made. And the card is going to have a QR code that goes to the Google review, right immediately to it. And then I'm going to put something catchy up top, like, my family is relying upon you to leave me a 5-star review. You know, to really
yeah,
I ain't putting that.
Pull the heartstrings.
I'm going for the heartstrings on it, but I ain't going to put exactly that. But it's really close.
Yeah.
And hand that out to every one of them. And just, you know, if you can ask somebody eye to eye, be like, hey, I think you could tell due to me picking this house apart for 3 hours that I did my very best for you. If I could ask you for a favor, you know, would you mind to leave me a review? It is so important to my business. And, you know, if not, no worries, you know, but if you could, it would really help me. Hand them that card, dude. They take a picture with their phone. So I've not done it yet. I've still got to have the QR. I'm gonna use Fiverr to do the QR code, you know, and then order some up and start handing them out to see if it. Because, you know, of course we've got the Spector emails and the text message that goes out that asks for the review, and I just feel like I should be getting more, man. So I'm gonna try this card deal and see if there's any difference.
No, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Because it's easy. It's so easy just to click your camera app, scans it, opens it right away.
Yes.
And go straight to the page. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And put like a picture of my daughter on the card with like some dusty clothes and like real skinny dude, like eating a piece of old bread or something, you know, I think is what the angle I'm going for.
Right. Yep. What I wanted to mention is I was going through your reviews and I saw that you had a couple 1-stars. So I sorted them lowest to highest.
Yes.
And your 1-star reviews might as well be 5-star reviews. Because there's literally a lady complaining that you were too thorough on her house she was selling. and I thought that, I was like, you can't get a better review than that.
Yeah, man. I was like, thank you, you know. But that is, if you get 1 stars, those are the ones you want, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, man.
But no,
Well,
they've got to, that's for the new inspectors. Yes, you've got to make those realtor connections. When you start out, you just won't survive solely by just popping up a beautiful website and looking professional. You've got to get some realtor referrals going. And once you build up that clientele underneath of you and that word of mouth takes off and those Google reviews grow, there's where it can start to gain legs on its own. And but that's a little bit of a process, you know, but they can do it. They can do it. Yeah, man.
Absolutely. So Casey, I'm gonna probably hop off here.
Yes.
See your family back there. They're waiting.
Yeah, man. It was
where can people find you or reach you, social media, website, stuff like that?
Yeah. So prohitn.com is website. You know, there's a message thing on there. You can message me on there, message me, friend me on Facebook, message me on Facebook. I try to help anybody that contacts me. If it's I know everything by no stretch of the imagination. I am smart enough to know that there's so much I don't know, especially when you start getting deep into this stuff, especially when you start looking at guys like Charles Buell, Mike Twitty, you know, and some of these people, you know, you got a little one there.
Yep. And, here's Wyatt. Come here.
It's all right. Look,
there's
man.
Wyatt. You say
hey,
hi.
Hey, bud.
Hi.
How are you?
That's with a little parachute.
You got a parachute? Awesome.
All right. That looks fun. That looks fun.
Yeah.
But no, if I can't help people with a technical question, I can find the information that will, or find somebody who can. So, you know, or if they just want to bounce business stuff off of me, whatever, but Facebook, Messenger, however they can find me. Template site is inspectortemplate.com. It gives people a huge leg up. Is it the best template in the world? No. Will it save you 1,000 hours from building your own? It absolutely will. And it's all right. It's all factual information, so they can't come back at you. So, you know, if it helps them, great. If not, I'll help them in any way I can, man. But I just want to, like you, elevate the industry, help the industry, help others. I like seeing people succeeding. I don't have a jealous bone in my body. I love seeing people do well. And this is an awesome industry to do well in. It's provided a great life for me and my family and you and your family. And man, I wish everybody the best. And it was an absolute honor for you to ask me to be on your first podcast, because I think you can take this really far, dude. I think you can do really good with this, Zach. I do.
That's the goal. And, you know, I can attest to Casey. I feel like I bother him sometimes because I'll send him a bunch of questions about stuff, but he helps everybody. Just a genuine dude. I'm going to put all your stuff, links and stuff, in the description.
Thank you, brother.
But yeah, it's an honor to have you on my first podcast. Awesome. I was thinking about doing this a couple of years ago. I finally just pulled the trigger on it. I bought a little mic and stuff to get it going. But I was like, KC's got to be my first guest. Like,
oh, man. That gets me in the feels, Zach. Gets me in the feels, brother. Yes, sir. Dude, I'm tickled for you, and I can't wait to watch what this develops into. And I think it'd be good for the industry, and it's going to be good for your business. It's going to show a different side of you and show how you care. And it's a win-win all the way around. You're going to help other inspectors, and it's good, brother. It's good. I wish you the best, of course.
Yep. Same to you, man. It was an honor speaking with you.
Yes. Have a great evening, brother.
All right. You too. We'll see you.
See you, buddy.